Hello and welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. My name's Robin Daly, regular host for the show and also founder of the UK charity Yes to Life that champions the introduction of integrative medicine into cancer care in the UK. A more holistic approach that encompasses support for body, mind and spirit. My guest this week is someone with an enormous passion for natural medicine and a singular focus on helping people with cancer. She's studied chemistry, geochemistry, nutritional, biochemistry, naturopathy, psychotherapy, hypnotherapy, and more. Her investigations into cancer and health have led her to write more than 20 books, and she's still writing more and busier than ever, directly supporting people with cancer in her 80s. I'm delighted to welcome back the enormously energetic and enthusiastic Dr. Zandria Williams, and I'm talking to her over the internet at her London practice. Welcome back to the Yes to Life show.
Thank you, Robin. Lovely to be back.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk. So today we're going to be talking about the concept of metabolic types. This is an area that's maybe not widely known about or appreciated, but a very important element of your own work, I believe. My first question is this. How much is this a concept, a useful working model? And how much could it be considered as fact, as established through research?
Right. A lot of it is fact. We know the autonomic nervous system goes from parasympathetic dominant to sympathetic dominant, and that's based on physiological functions, which we may go into later. There are other differentiations as well. The actual stories about some of it, and when I first came across it, well, actually, I first came across it in 1980 something, and we had people divided into catabolic and anabolic, but that's rather gone. The key chap that set some of this up was William Kelly, who had cancer, and is fairly well known and often criticized, obviously, by the medical profession. But he was very clear. When he was working with his cancer, he found that if he ate a diet that was nearly all fruit and vegetables, to help the listener, that was meaning he was a type 1 sympathetic dominant, then his health improved enormously. And if he ate more any animal flesh or fish, I think he had an egg occasionally and some yogurt, then his health improved enormously. And so word got known in about 1960s in that part of Texas that this chap helped you if you had cancer. And everybody got put onto his diet.
Right.
And he then met up, somebody came to him and got worse and worse and worse on his diet.
Right.
And so he then realized that there were other types. And it's all built from there onwards, it's all built on experience, on case histories, on people experiencing things. And then after that, I'll make the jump. He was dividing people into sympathetic dominant, parasympathetic dominant, and he found that some people with cancer actually did better on the parasympathetic dominant type of diet. His physiology was different. And then people came along and somebody else came along and explored people as being fast oxidizers and slow oxidizers. There's biochemistry for that.
Right.
There's physiological understanding of the way the body works for the autonomic nervous system dominant. And then it's built on the experience of Kelly in his 20, 30 years of working in this field.
Right. Okay. So maybe we should just cover a bit of terminology. If you can just give us some sort of explanation about fast and slow oxidizers and about the parasympathetic nervous system, etc. Just so as we know the territory.
Your nervous system is divided into two in a number of different ways. But what concerns us, some people are the get up, go, go, fight and flight, really active people, sympathetic nervous system dominant.
Okay.
SNS.
All right.
Other people are what you often may think of as slow, as slightly solid people. Their dominant physiology is looking after the internal housekeeping of the body, the digestive system and the urinary system and all sorts of other aspects of it. Now, you can't have them both on at once.
Okay.
If your body is fired up for the sympathetic system, then all the blood, everything else, all is worked on that half of your body. It's like people say to you, sit down and eat. Don't eat while you're rushing around. While you're rushing around, you can't have your digestive system working properly.
Okay.
And some people are very good at their internal housekeeping with the parasympathetic nervous system, and other people don't have much very, very good efficient digestion. They don't give the digestive system a chance. And they are the sympathetic number ones, and they're the ones who have external housekeeping, if you like.
Right, I understand. Okay, how about this fast and slow oxidizing? What does that refer to?
Yeah, that's based on the biochemistry of what's going on in the cells. And this was the work of William Walcott. And he thought that Kelly was missing a trick. And he said, look, some people do this and some people do that. Now, what they were doing is in your mitochondria, you've got, which are the little organelles within the cells that help you to burn up and release the energy from fats, proteins, and carbohydrates.
Okay.
And it, you imagine a merry-go-round of chemical reactions and then another pathway coming off that. Some people have a much better merry-go-round than others, and other people have a much better straight pathway than others. This is a very non-technical explanation,
we like non-technical. Thank you. Yeah.
You know, if you're very good, if you're very quick at doing the merry-go-round, then you've got to change what you're eating so that you balance it with the second pathway. If you're very good at the second pathway, you have to change what you're eating and encourage the first merry-go-round pathway.
I understand.
I don't think I can make that easier
for general
consumption.
I think.
But it means that what we are doing is simply trying to bring the human body into a somewhat better balance at the same time as recognizing that you can't ignore it. I think everybody in healthcare should understand this concept. It's the foundation. And if I can give you an example of why I think it's absolutely important, a chap I met when I first came back from Australia called Simon was, 50s or 60s.
Right.
He was overweight, high blood pressure, diabetic, high triglycerides, no energy. And his doctor had said to him, you know, you've got to give up meat and give up eggs and give up butter and use margarine instead. And all the things that you would normally, doctors would frequently tell people to do. And he'd been doing that for 2 years when I met up with him. And he was feeling rotten. He was gaining weight. Everything was getting worse. And I said, okay, let's do this test, a simple questionnaire to see what metabolic type you are. We did it and we got the printout from the company that, that at that time was doing it. And that printout said he should be eating meat and fish and eggs and cheese and maybe root vegetables, but not too much fruit or other green leafy vegetables. And there was more to it. And he looked at that and he looked at me and he said, but that's all the foods that I love. I said, well, that's great. Go back on them. Wonderful. He said, I can't. If I do that, my doctor will kill me and my wife will kill me. I nearly said, well, if you don't swap, I'll kill you. But if any case, your diet will kill you.
Right.
And he said, we agreed. He would for a month or 6 weeks or something like that, go back to this other diet. He came back after a bit over a month. He'd lost weight. He'd been to the doctor. He'd got the results. So it must have been about 6 weeks. He'd got the results. His weight was down. His triglycerides were down. His cholesterol was down. His blood sugar level was down. He had vastly cut down on his diabetic medication. I don't think I mentioned he was a diabetic. Mm-hmm. He was a new man, full of energy, full of beans. Right. And if he'd gone on like that, he would have died early. And the doctors would probably said, well, it's good we got him when he did, to give him the extra life that he's presumably had because of what we did, not realizing that what they had done had had the reverse effect.
Right, right.
And, you know, it was just so obvious that's what we had to do.
Right. Important stuff. Okay. Well, look, you've broadly divided people into two types. Is that how many metabolic types there are?
No. To my mind, they're the two most important. And probably the autonomic nervous system one is the most important, but one should be more flexible than that. So I take both on board. And I run a questionnaire that gives me another scale from efficient digesters to inefficient metabolizers, rather. And the people who are inefficient metabolizers do need to have more cooked food, and who are very efficient at it do better on much more raw food. It's more of a minor functional problem than the first two.
Right. Okay, so it's sort of a frontline division and a second line division.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, and in terms of, identifying your own personal situation, this is a kind of spectrum thing rather than just you're in one box or another.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you imagine it like two axes, horizontal x-axis and a vertical y-axis, let's say,
right,
you'll be somewhere along this linear length. You could be extreme one type sympathetic dominant. You could be a moderate sympathetic dominant. You could be more like a balanced autonomic nervous system dominant. Or you could be an extreme meat-eating carnivore parasympathetic dominant, or a moderate and increasingly more moderate and more balanced parasympathetic dominant until you come to the midpoint.
Right. Okay. Good. All right.
It's the same with slow and fast oxidizers.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've given one example of why this matters and what type we are and what the consequences are likely to be for our lives and particularly, of course, for our health and well-being. Do you want to say anything else about that?
For health and well-being, it's critical for your life if you want to go down this road. I had, for instance, a chap in Sydney who worked near me. And he was determined to be a vegan for spiritual reasons and whatever.
Right.
And he was thin and had no energy and was really, his health was deteriorating. And I finally said, look, I do really think you should eat some animal-type protein. In other words, I really think you are more parasympathetic than you're treating yourself.
Okay.
And we got him up to a point where he would have 3 ounces of fish 3 days a week.
Right.
And he got a bit more energy and put his weight on. But worse than that, Kelly, that I mentioned earlier, finally had a client that came to him for her cancer. And he put her on his very sympathetic, dominant, vegetable-rich diet. And she just got worse and worse and worse. She lost weight. She was heading downhill. And really, you could say that, well, what Kelly said, you've got to change your diet and not do the one I've put you on. I can't afford to have you dying because I'm a dentist, not a doctor, and I don't have a license.
Right.
And he put her, and she didn't want to do it, but he persuaded her. And she started eating dairy and animal protein 3 times a day. Her health blossomed.
Right.
It matters so much.
Right. Very interesting. Well, of course, I mean, lifestyle choices, if you like, where people decide to be vegan for reasons which aren't necessarily to do with health at all, then it's you need to carefully consider.
It needs a lot of careful considering. There were some people, dentists from America, who were looking at food and diet and the state of the teeth, And they went all around the world looking at the traditional diets back in the sort of early 1900s. Mm. And they looked at the Polynesian diet, the Himalayan diet, the South American diet, the Greenlander, Icelander diets, the equatorial diets, all the diets that were, because back then, 100 years ago, people didn't move around a lot. Mm. So they ate the local diet.
Right.
And none of them thought about intellectually, should I be a vegetarian or not?
No.
Nowhere in the world did they find a traditional diet that was even vegetarian, never mind, certainly not vegan.
Right.
And the vegetarian diets that they got to had interesting ways of getting more slightly animal protein into it than that.
Right. Yeah, very interesting. Okay, great. Now, the next question, you've already indicated to me before that we're on a hiding to nothing, trying to go in some depth into these types. But nonetheless, I'm still going to ask you, see if we could just scratch the surface a bit at least, and just to okay. say a bit more about each metabolic type.
Right. It's not so much each type, because you've got a long scale and you slide along
fair enough.
More of this, more of that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, people like to put numbers on it. I think for the average person, probably for the average person listening to this, it would help if they think about just being on a sliding scale, mm-hmm. just using the sympathetic and parasympathetic scale, because the others modify it somewhat, but we can leave them to one side.
Okay.
And saying, okay, the extreme sympathetic diet based on a few people that have done really well on it, would be quite a lot of fruit. For people with cancer, which, as you know, is one of my real specialties,
yes.
They might want to cut down on some of the fruit. But if they don't have cancer and the sugar's not a problem, I mean, they could have a main meal. I worked with a couple of my staff in Sydney. I heard them going one night, or he came to click her, and they were talking about it. She's okay, what are we having for dinner tonight? Is it going to be a fruit salad or a vegetable salad? And I said, you mean you're just having fruit salad for a meal? And they, yes, fruit salad and some yogurt. You know, that's a big meal.
Right.
Now, that's a sympathetic dominant extreme. They had very little animal product at all. They didn't think about it, building it into a meal. I had another chap here in London since I've been working with cancer. And in one of the group sessions we did, everybody shared their diet. He had 5 eggs for breakfast.
Right.
he had, if he went out for lunch, he would have maybe, say, a business lunch, a prawn cocktail. And he'd leave the lettuce behind, because after all, that was just for looks, wasn't it? It wasn't mm-hmm. for eating. And then he might have a steak with butter on it. It sounds a bit like a ketogenic diet too, which does suit yes. this sort of person.
Yes.
With a bit of salad, and then he might have some cheese, and he would have a lot of cheese, only a little bit of biscuits, and a few vegetables, but not much.
Right.
Interesting. And that's the other extreme, the parasympathetic dominant extreme, and was very healthy on it.
Hmm. It's interesting. I mean, that description is kind of what you think of as a sort of man's diet, you know, where you ignore all the green stuff and you just get to the meat and the cheese
Absolutely.
And eggs and fish. And
it's
just interesting that it actually suits some people and it actually works for them as a healthy way to live.
Yes. And you're quite right about the man diet. In one of the, I belong to one of these sort of Mayfair clubs where you get whole tablefuls of men picking their favourite diet when they're free to choose.
Right.
And one of them, he would literally eat meat.
Right.
He would have some sort of meat or fishy start, and then he'd ask for the trolley, and he'd have 5 or 6 slabs of nearly semi-raw, you know, red beef.
Yeah.
And then the waiter would come round with the vegetables, and I said, come on, Brian, you've got to have some vegetables. Put that stuff away, he'd say.
Right.
And even if he let them put it on, you know, that's the other extreme. And he was 80 plus, you know, right. He was doing well.
How about that? Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, you know, it's so drilled into us that you must eat your greens and all that.
Yes.
You know, well, maybe it's not always true. That's very interesting.
And this is why I say it really ought to be that everybody studying health and nutrition and healthcare has this as the foundation.
Mm.
And the thing you also get that is really unfortunate, somebody comes up with this new ketogenic diet and a whole lot of the people that they talk to feel better and they say, right, that's great. And then they make the mistake. They say, everybody should be on that diet.
Yeah.
No. You know, even Seyfried, who's written a brilliant book on the cause of cancer, built on the work of predecessing biochemistry and so forth. Great book, brilliant book. I read it with enthusiasm. And at the end, he says, this is a ketogenic diet. Everybody must be on that. And I've had people go on that diet and feel terrible and their health go way down. It's so important to suit the person. You have a diet for a person, not a diet for a disease.
Yeah. Well, the way you can make sense of this is, of course, you know, if you think of human beings as starting out as very distinct races in very distinctly different circumstances, diets, available food, all the rest of it, temperature they're living in, all these things very different, then it makes sense that they would have evolved to suit those conditions and therefore have fundamentally different digestions.
You take the Eskimos.
Right.
They eat about 90% fish and blubber and
that's
whatever
what
goes
got.
With that climate.
Not too much greens
they
up
come,
there.
Yes, suits them perfectly. Right. They've evolved to it.
Yeah. Okay, so I wanted to know whether there's anything fundamentally better or worse about any particular metabolic types. You know, is it like being dealt a bad hand if you've got a particular metabolic type?
No, it's not being. You're dealt with the way you're, you know, somebody who is born, an American male who's born to grow to, say, 6'6" and he's a very athletic, will be a brilliant basketball player.
Right.
Somebody who grows up and wants to be a small, well, he doesn't, but he becomes a petite ballet dancer for a male. He will be suited to that.
Right.
It's neither better to be a basketball player or a ballet dancer. It's to find a career in this example that suits your body type and function.
Right.
You can't make the little chap a basketball player and the great big 6-footer a ballet dancer. It's not going to work.
It's not. Okay, yeah, good illustration. So you've spoken a little bit about how you go about finding out your own status in regards to metabolic type. Do you want to just say a bit more about what's involved?
Yes, and you can do some very clever physiological tests to find out, but I don't find that terribly satisfactory. It's very time-consuming. And personally, you know, I'd have to have a separate office, a separate staff member to spend a couple of hours. And I haven't gone into that. What I do find works really, really well is questionnaires.
Right.
And there is one questionnaire that is available on the internet. It's not my first choice, but I'm giving it to you because people can access it and be completely independent while they use it.
Right.
That is one at healthexcel.com.
Okay.
And that will tell you. You fill out the questionnaire, you pay your money, fill out the questionnaire. Within minutes, it spits back at you.
Right.
These are the foods that are good for you. These are the foods that you aren't, and you are of this type or of that type. And they give you whether you're parasympathetic, sympathetic, or a fast oxidizer or a slow oxidizer or balanced in between them.
Okay.
Mm. And the second questionnaire is one that I have developed from the work of Kelly, the first dentist that I mentioned. Very hard to get hold of that, really hard. Took me several years to get hold of
really?
That. And we've got it now on a more comprehensive spreadsheet. And all my clients get, I give them the file. They answer all the questions, takes them about an hour and more if they're talking. And then I get that back. And two of the students that did my advanced cancer care course have converted that into an Excel spreadsheet type program. And so when I get the results of the questionnaire back, and that's all free.
Right.
And they'll come up with, you know, type 4, type 6, or whatever comes up on the feedback. They can work with that. But, you know, they have to figure out what a type 6 should eat. There is a book a couple of people wrote on that, but it's been out of print for a long time. It's easy for me and for my patients because I simply look at their numbers and say, oh, you should be eating this, 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 and that.
Right.
In actual fact, you can drill down more deeply and to be precisely what they should eat. I am thinking of ways that I can bring this up to a level where it can become more public. But in the meantime, anybody sends in and wants a questionnaire at the file, I can send that out to them.
Right.
And then we can take it from there.
That's great.
And that, I think, is much more reliable than the healthexcel.com ones. I do a cancer care course for postgraduates occasionally here. And during that, one of the women had done both of them, like they all do.
Right.
And she said, well, look, it says that I'm a fast oxidizer and I should meat and all that sort of thing. And she said, it's ridiculous. I've never eaten meat. I don't like meat. I hate eating meat. I don't feel good if I try and eat anything like that. I only feel good if I eat a near vegetarian light sort of diet. She hadn't done the sympathetic, parasympathetic one. I said, well, do that questionnaire.
Okay.
Came out that she was quite strongly sympathetic and she should eat the sort of pescatarian diet or whatever we like to call it.
Yes.
I don't know why it was so different, but if anything clashes, I go back to the autonomic nervous system change and I get such good results. I had one woman, part of my, I do free Zooms every single day.
Yes.
Open house to anybody who wants them on any subject like this. They simply have to come to my website and ask more about it or email me. And one woman on that was, she'd had cancer. She'd been put on a vegetarian diet, which wasn't right for her. Her health had gone sort of down and down and down. And when we next got together on the next Zoom and she'd sort of, she said, God, this saved my life. She said, I was on this, anti-cancer vegan vegetarian diet and going downhill. And she got, yeah.
Right.
I think I haven't quite answered your question, but I'll leave it to you.
Well, no, that's good. You've told us about how you go about finding it out. And thanks for that, telling us about your own service there. So again, presumably they would contact through the website, which is andreawilliams.co.uk, I think.
Yes.
Right.
Or the better than that, they can email orders@xandriawilliams.co.uk and ask for the file and they'll get it straight away.
Excellent.
Then they can contact me and I can help put them in the right direction. And if we've got a more systematic way of doing the testing, I'll keep them up to date. Or they can join our mailing list.
Right.
If they send an email to education@xandriawilliams.co.uk, Kelly will feel that and tell them where they can listen to the Zoom talks, where they can learn more about the metabolic types, how they can talk to me, whatever.
Right. Okay.
All of that.
Great. Okay. So I haven't been talking that much about cancer yet, but of course I do want to tie this all in back to cancer. There's been a lot of talk on this show over the years about the metabolic theory of cancer, a theory which underpins many of the integrative approaches to supporting people with cancer. And I wonder if you could summarise what that theory says about cancer.
Well, there are two theories of cancer. The medical approach is to say that it's a genetic disorder and that if we can figure out the genes and get remedies or drugs to work on those genes, presumably, that will be fine. And they've been saying this for nearly 100 years now. And so far, it's not impressive. The metabolic approach to cancer really started about 1924 by Warburg, who was a brilliant biochemist. He was given one Nobel Prize for his work, and he would have had another one, but Hitler said, no, you can't have it, or something like that.
Okay.
Very good biochemist. And he sorted out and proposed that cancer, you've got your cells, each cell on average has about 1,000 mitochondria. These release the energy from food. Warburg said, no, that's true. But he said, cancer happens when your mitochondria stop functioning and the cells then start to ferment. It's got nothing to do with your genes at the first level, does at the second level. So that you look at the where the mitochondria are changing. Mitochondria produce, say, protein, I think called P53 or BAX or BCL2 or different compounds that help to make sure that every time your DNA splits open to two strands, multiplies and makes two new strands and then two new cells and so on and so forth, that those every single step along the way is perfect.
Okay.
If it's not perfect, you get, you know, damaged cells producing more damaged cells and more damaged cells.
Right.
And there's a lot of behind that. I mentioned Seyfried earlier on, who's taken Warburg's work and written this brilliant book, Cancer as a Metabolic Disease. I mean, it's not for the faint-hearted if you're not a biochemist, but my God, it's good if it's your biochemist.
It's definitely.
And I've had quite a lot of patients who've read it.
Really?
Not understanding lots of it, yes. Because you have, haven't you?
I've tried. I went to the easy option. There's another book for the layperson, which is much more my cup of tea.
Yeah. But the point is, you know, when Warburg started, we didn't know what the mitochondria did inside precisely.
Right.
We didn't know the Krebs cycle. We had no idea about the electron transport chain. And yet it's all fitting. The more and more we've learned, the more Warburg's ideas as to what causes cancer just slots in perfectly. Mm. Then you get a genetic problem because you've got your genes in your nucleus, which you get from mum and dad. You've got genes in the mitochondria, which you only get from mum. And those genes have a lot to do with preventing cancer. But because you've got so many thousands of mitochondria, it's not surprising to find that when you look at the genetic makeup of a tumour, you might have literally 180 different mitochondrial genetic lines. You can't beat that with a drug,
right,
or drugs. You can only beat that by restoring homeostasis, which is the key thing I'm going to talk about in a couple of weeks' time, apparently,
right,
for part of your group. You've got to restore normal function. And, you know, the people that I have, I don't say I can cure cancer. Nobody can cure cancer, but you can help do a lot towards it. You can't cure dying of old age. I mean, it's that ridiculous. But if you can give the person what their body needs according to the way their unique metabolic needs function, then they can better restore the balance that's going on in the mitochondria between what I spoke of earlier, the circular Krebs cycle and the linear fatty acid breakdown line. You can help to prevent cancer and restore their health.
Mm.
Well, the real trouble is this. In the metabolic approach to cancer, we have a biochemical mechanism for understanding what triggers the cancer, the lack of oxygen and proper function of the mitochondria. We know how to make the mitochondria function better. It won't happen with a drug, but okay, it'll happen if you feed the cells what their mitochondria need.
Okay.
Once the mitochondria is damaged, your P53 is maybe mutated, which is something we test for in our metabolic analysis of clients, that you'll get some damaged genes. You will then get second level, as I mentioned just earlier,
yeah,
the genetic problems that medicine loves to find and then try and deal with. But if you ask the doctor or the medical scientist in the conventional medical field how cigarette smoking or this drug or this carcinogen or whatever, what's the mechanism by which that converts into cancer, they don't have it. We do, because we know that that's changing these chemicals along these pathways until your mitochondria stops functioning.
Hmm. Okay. So you began to tie it back there, which is, of course, the important bit. We've been talking about metabolic types and why they're important and everything, but you started to tie back this metabolic underpinning of cancer back into the lifestyle choices that emanate from knowing your metabolic type. Yeah. So that's the important bit here, isn't it?
Yeah, it's sure, that's where we come from the start. People think that if you've got cancer, you are too acid, and you should eat a very alkaline residue diet, which is more or less a vegan or vegetarian diet. Mm-hmm. But if you're already too alkaline, like the parasympathetic dominants, and you make them eat vegetables and become more alkaline, you're going to make them sicker.
Mm.
It's so fundamental, whether you've got Parkinson's disease or ingrowing toenails,
right,
that you get your basic needs met. You don't put petrol in a diesel car, and you don't put diesel in a petrol car. You figure out which it is and feed the cars accordingly. It's that basic.
Mm.
So you don't take your cars to the garage to find out why your engine is skipping beats and things. You just say, look, you've got the wrong fuel. Put it right.
Right.
Bingo.
Right. And the reason this is such, one of the reasons, say, this is such a modern-day curse is because we now do all live in places which, where the diet and the conditions are quite different to the one of our ancestors.
Maybe, but we also do things in a way now where it's considered perfectly normal to sort of eat walking along the street and never mind your digestive system.
Right.
Where we all eat, most people are fairly balanced. It's the extremes that are really important. And most of us eat a fairly balanced diet. But in terms of cancer and the metabolic theory, most of us eat a diet that cripples our mitochondria.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that needs to be put right.
It certainly does.
In a way, it's a question of finding out your metabolic type, getting that diet, knowing if you've got cancer or not, and then out of that diet, taking the things that will work best for you to restore homeostasis, restore normal health. That's not just making sure you get all the vitamins and minerals you need. You probably need 200 or 300 different things, if not many, many more.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that by taking bottles off the shelf and putting them all together.
Right.
You need to get the diet that has got the right emphasis for you and suits you. And the individual is what counts. The individual is unique, and build it up from there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that makes sense. So we're about out of time. I just wanted to give you you're clearly really invested in this view of health and disease, really passionate about it, and particularly when it comes to people with cancer. But I wondered if you could give us your elevator pitch summary. So you've got, a minute or two to make the case for the importance of metabolic typing and metabolic theory in approaching cancer to someone. What would you say?
A bit like layers of an onion. I would say, if you're going to restore normal health, you won't do it with drugs and medications. You won't do it with fast processed foods. It's essential to, first of all, build a solid foundation on the type of diet that is right for you. And then out of that type of diet, pick the real key things that are going to help you through cancer. You know, you wouldn't eat a whole lot of sugar, even if a sympathetic dominant could do it.
Okay.
It's really important to get the foundation right, otherwise you'll only build a shaky house.
Right.
You build a solid foundation by knowing their metabolic type, eating towards that, and restoring homeostasis and improving the function and looking after your mitochondria.
Okay. All right. Well, look, thanks very much for that. And thanks so much for coming on the show today, Zandri. You're always such a mine of information. And your passion for helping people with cancer leads you to all sorts of inspirational initiatives and efforts at a time of life when most people have long since forgotten what work even looks like. So, you know, amazing hats off to you for still delivering amazing things and inspiring so many people.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a real pleasure talking with you. I can't imagine retiring, even if I am 80. I just love the research of what I do. I love knowing that whatever outrageous things I might seem to be saying to people, I've got the biochemistry understanding to pin it, because I have 4 degrees. They're all in chemistry of various sorts.
Yes.
You've got the underpinning to be sure of what we're saying and to be able to help people and see them blossoming under my care. And it's not my care. It's all the scientists and researchers that have gone before. I've simply managed to bring it all together, make it a sort of consistent program, and then encourage people to do it. And then by having these open Zooms every day, filling in all the details when they come along, and how do I cook this or how do I prepare that? It's just a fabulous way to work with people and my training in all aspects of it, psychotherapy too.
Yeah, well, you clearly love it all. So huge thanks.
Yes.
Huge thanks to you, Zandri.
Thank you for having me on, Robin. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, and you do such good work with your Yes to Life initiative. It's a privilege to be helping and part of it with you.
Do check out the enormous wealth of resources available on Dr. Williams' website at zandriawilliams.co.uk. And Zandria is spelled X-A-N-D-R-I-A, zandriawilliams.co.uk. Early bird tickets are on sale for Yes to Life Spring Congress, Nutritional Science and Cancer, a 2-day online event on the 27th and 28th of March. On the Saturday, I'll be hosting a fantastic lineup of guest specialists, and the Sunday will be focused around 2 workshops offering ample opportunity to engage with experts. If you want to find out more or to book, just click the link on the banner as soon as you arrive at the Yes to Life homepage, that's yestolife.org.uk, which will take you to the dedicated event website. I'd like to tell you about a couple of new features that we just launched for the show. If you go to the Yes to Life show page on the Yes to Life website, so again that's yestolife.org.uk, and you click the link to the Yes to Life show that's on the homepage, we've added 2 opportunities for you to interact with us. Firstly, you can now comment on individual shows, tell us what you liked, what you didn't like, and then you can also contact me direct from the show page with suggestions for the show. New guests, guests you want to hear more from, new topics, topics you want to hear more about. I'd love to hear your thoughts, and it will be a big help in planning future shows. Thanks so much for listening today. I hope you found the discussion interesting and helpful. I have another expert guest lined up for you next week, so do join me again for another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.